Hello, I'm Tammy Burnett, and this is the world-famous FinOps Pod.
Okay, what are we talking about today?
We are going to talk about the podcast, and we're recording now.
Okay, do you want me to just go ahead and start? All right. Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Stacey Case.
And I'm Joe Daly. And this is
the FinOps Pod.
The FinOps Pod, or just FinOps Pod. I don't know if the is necessary. Hey, Stacey.
Wait, hold on just a second. Do we normally just say FinOps Pod or the FinOps Pod?
I just say FinOps Pod. Some people say the FinOps Pod, which I allow that in there because I kind of say I'm using the Instagram, the TikTok. You know,
it in an ironic way.
Yeah. So all the youthful FinOps Pod listeners will get really upset with us older folks calling it the FinOps Pod. But sure.
I usually do say, and this is FinOps Pod.
Yeah.
That sounds right. I got that out of the way.
Yeah. That's been explained. Oh. Mystery solved.
Woo. Mm-hmm. No right or wrong for that one.
No. Okay.
Anyway, so Joe, what,
Stacey,
what are we talking about today?
I was in Las Vegas for Google Next last week, and I had a lovely time connecting with some of our community members. I had a great conversation with Gordon Douglas, and he brought up the podcast, and he said, I love the podcast. I love listening to the podcast. But he said someone on his team, he wouldn't admit who, because he knows I like to call out detractors of the podcast. On the podcast, he said there's someone on his team that's Team Holger and thinks it's too much blah blah blah. And I'm like, well, I want names, and he wouldn't give me the name, but he said, you know,
so this one's for you. This one's dedicated to you, teammate, who thinks we're too much blah blah blah.
You know what I want to do sometime is have Holger on to do just live commentary. Just yelling, shut up!
Like you and I starting to do the intro, and he's just like, okay, enough, wrap it up.
Move it
and
along.
Then we could engage him, and then we could cut all of our talk off and just have him doing the blah, blah, blahs the whole time. Like he just would not stop like saying wrap it up like so many times. And we could just casually ask him questions and not tell them that it's like what will be in there. And they're like, ooh. He really is a chatter, that one.
Holger's a chatterbox. Put a microphone in front of him. It's all blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so it was lovely. It was funny. I just tease. I always like engaging with podcast listeners and anyone in the community. And I left Google Next in our events with Google super pumped about FinOpsX. I'm super excited to see everyone, give everyone hugs. It's only, as of this date, 9 weeks away. I'm not panicking.
I'm not panicking either. It's going to be amazing. 9 weeks, you say? Okay, I might be panicking a little now.
Yeah, 9 weeks. That's coming up fast.
No, that's good.
That's coming up fast. If you haven't checked out the agenda, go check out the sessions that are up there right now. There's something for everyone. We've had a flood of data analysts enter the community lately, and we have some great data sessions in there, anomaly sessions. Finance, ITAM, SaaS, all sorts of things that you're interested in. Focus, lots of focus-related sessions.
Yeah, that'll be great. I think especially since we announced Focus last year, the evolution of it and where we are today, there's a lot of questions around there. And I think those sessions are going to be really popular as well.
Absolutely.
Getting further clarity on what it is, how to use it. Adopting. It's exciting. I'm excited. Yep. How to adopt Focus. We might be launching a course then too. Ooh. For Focus Analysts is the Certified Focus Analyst will be launched at X as well. Yeah. Ooh. To help support that.
Are you ready for the breakout session Applause Wars?
Because of course I'm going to win. I just hope that folks, when they step into a room and see that I'm the host of that room, that they know we must applaud, like loudly. Even if you're not right next door to me, you will be able to hear us. Three rooms away. I think they actually purposely put us next to each other each year now because of what we started in Austin.
Yes.
So I think they do it at least a couple of sessions each year where Joe and I are next door to each other in rooms just so we can see who can applaud and cheer the loudest for our speakers. Okay, so what is this? Hey, Joe, what's this podcast about today besides the blah, blah, blahs?
Fieldhouse Pod, not just blah, blah, blah. That's the new tagline. I had a conversation with Tammy Burnett. She answered a Slack post a number of months ago about the question about starting up a FinOps practice in a large enterprise. And Tammy responded, and she started sharing some of her perspectives of her experience working at a large enterprise, which shall not be named. We are kind of skirting around communications departments with this one. So whatever you do, do not look up where Tammy Burnett works, all right? Do not look Tammy Burnett.
No cheating.
No cheating.
Don't look at her LinkedIn.
Don't look at her LinkedIn. Don't look at the show notes where her LinkedIn's posted. It will remain anonymous. She works at a not to be named giant global enterprise. And she discusses and shares her experience of how to launch a FinOps practice there. And it was really thought provoking. She doesn't skirt around the entire internal politics issue, which is a something that really doesn't get talked about. It's not really part of the framework, fight internal politics. But that is a reality for many, many of us who have been in corporate environments or are still in corporate environments. And how she dealt with that and really had me thinking like, huh, I should have, that opportunity was available to me when I was launching a FinOps practice and I didn't take that opportunity. And that probably would have been a smarter thing. So real thought provoking, really great conversation with Tammy.
Yeah, people will learn lots. Yeah.
They'll learn a lot of things, but not where she works.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah. By the way, I think people probably are in situations like you were, Joe, where you didn't necessarily know there was an opportunity. And listening to other folks' stories like Tammy's always sparks that and helps, you know, drive what's next for you. And, oh, yeah, I should try that too. Or, oh, I could do that internally as well. And sometimes it sparks that one thing that you need to do within your own organization or could do within your own organization. So cool. Absolutely. I'm excited to listen.
The obvious thing for someone may be not obvious to another. So that's the beauty of all this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Cool. With that, let's get to it. Tammy, months ago, there was a message in our FinOps Foundation Slack channels where someone was like, hey, I'm just starting out building a FinOps team, building a FinOps function in a large organization. Is there anyone out there who would be willing to talk me through this? And something along those lines, I'm paraphrasing, of course. And you responded and said, I've been doing that for years now at my company, which shall not be named. I do that. I've set up the FinOps function and team at my organization. And you just jumped in and I said, that sounds like a great podcast. Would you be willing to talk about it? And you said, yeah, and it's just taken us a while to get the scheduling set up. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and when you started this whole FinOps thing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I guess I started FinOps way back in the day before I even knew it was FinOps, right? My career kind of spans probably 30 some odd years, right? When we were talking about CapEx and data centers and working in storage area networking and promoting servers to production and really more of a capacity management role, which is kind of what we were calling FinOps before it was FinOps, before we moved into hybrid cloud computing. And so I'm going to date myself here. So we're talking about the Novell days and the Banyan days and Bmail and all those things, right? And so it just kind of evolved from moving from data center into more of a financial role, right? And you know, taking those technical aspects from being kind of an architectural designer and a financial planner in the data center days and moving those skill sets to more of a hybrid, right? So taking the data center knowledge and then kind of learning what the fundamentals were, building out policy and governance for AWS, not knowing it was FinOps, right? But saying, you know, budgets, people have budgets, and where are the spend overruns, and what are those cost optimization recommendations, and well before the days of commitment usage discounts, right? But just putting together what we called back then the state of the estate reporting, so our leaders could understand what are the financials, and then, you know, how are people using these things? And again, it predates FinOps, but the concept is still the same. It's still capacity management. It's still, you know, what are you using and how is it being spent? And in the CapEx days, you know, you had rack and stack and the charge for power and cooling and units and all that, right? And so then we started to transition that away into measuring things in the cloud. And one thing we learned really quick is spend can get out of control. It seems like it could be cheaper, but then if you don't have a lot of processes and policy and eyes watching it, it can get out of control really quickly. And I remember the first project I was on, we were trying to replicate something in a data center in AWS, and somebody came running in the room and said, shut it all down. And so, you know, they got the first bill and it was like, oh my goodness, right? So if I look at my career over, you know, I guess FinOps really getting involved in that, like, you know, 2017-18 timeframe as it was evolving, I think I said in the Women in FinOps talk that I gave the other day, it's kind of going from crayons to perfume and kind of growing up and evolving in that role and having been in IT long enough to see the big changes and moving away from CapEx to OpEx, right? And all the things involved. And how important it is to have eyes on your spend and budgets and forecasting, things like that. Yeah.
And really, besides the whole CapEx to OpEx part, the problems of the cloud aren't necessarily different from an on-prem environment. It's just they can multiply faster.
Oh, yes, they can.
Yeah. So your background absolutely helps build upon that. So how did it start? How did you get into the cloud FinOps part of this?
So I think I want to say we were anticipating, you know, being multi-cloud, right? And we started in AWS and we were using a third-party management tool called Cloud Health, right? And I went to their annual meet and greet and there were a lot of people there talking about FinOps and they're like, you should get in this community. And it was, I think it predated the book even, right? And so they were like, you know, it's a movement. You should get in the community. You should sign up for the Slack. You should definitely get involved because this is the new capacity management. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. And I remember I kind of started reading what was available online. And I mean, I was hooked from the first moment I attended one of the sessions. And I thought, wow, this is what we do. This is what it's called now, right? And because we're very hybrid, right? We're a little bit on-prem, but we're dipping our toe in the cloud. And to your point, there is a cost to agility and DevOps. Yeah. Right? It can get out of control very quickly. And so I was like, I got to figure out how to roll this thing out. I said, I have to lean into this. I have to support it and have to figure out how to cascade this. Right?
That's awesome. So then how did you take this to your company and get buy-in to get started?
Yeah, that's a tough one because, you know, and the more people I talk to, in the FinOps role, you can be a friend or you can be a foe. And sometimes you're not bringing a good message. It's unflattering. And so I think it's all how you tell the story. And really what you're trying to do is you're saying, this needs to be a product or, you know, a program, and that costs money. And so you need to be able to spell out what resources are required, what personas are required, who is going to do what. You need to talk about, what does that look like, at least at a high level, the policy, the framework? Are you asking for a sponsor? What are going to be the inputs and outputs of the program? The roles and responsibilities, I cannot stress that enough, because even in this day and age, in big companies, there's a lot of duplication and you know, sometimes it can be called collaboration, sometimes it can be competition, but you have to be able to curate some pretty magnificent content and say, this is a business case. And these are the people involved and the organizations involved. And it's likely going to be some of your CCOE and your finance and business stakeholders and procurement and engineers. And then you have to say how you're going to pay for that. And hopefully you have a pretty good pulse on what your spend is. And so you can identify the opportunities and you can put a percentage on that, right? And then you can determine the ROI, because that's what you got to speak the C-suite language is my recommendation there. And hopefully you're a good storyteller. You know, you can take those beautiful pictures and words on the page. And I liken it to maybe when you're a little kid and you're at the library and she's reading you a book and you're hanging on every word, like you're waiting for her to turn the page. And maybe practice your speech, pitch it to your direct C-suite leadership before you have to go up the chain and pitch it to a broader audience. Get some feedback, make some tweaks. But at the end of the day, you know, you don't have to have it all spelled out, but at a high level, you have to know the direction that you're going to go, what it costs, what people, and then what's your runway? How long do you think it would take to implement? And back then, you didn't really have the carbon consideration. Now you do, right? So you can get two feathers in one cap. So we talk about green ops and the digital footprint. So that's just a bonus there. And so back in the day when I was going through this, that wasn't really accompanying FinOps like it is today. But I think if you have a very compelling story and you can get buy-in from your finance and your procurement, and you're going to have to go around and solicit it. It's not something you can do overnight. And hopefully you have skills where you can influence people and gain their trust and get them on board, because those are the people that are going to help you sell it. The more people you can get on board with it, the better off you'll be when you have to go pitch this to a broader C-suite audience. That's my recommendation. But it takes time.
It does. And what I'm hearing what you're saying, because you work in a global corporate company. And I really, like you said, you can be a collaborator or a competitor, because that internal corporate politics is an absolutely real thing. And so you're saying, don't go for the top right away. Go for alignment and buy-in with your peers and your peer stakeholders. So kind of like the middle up, where you being wherever you're at, the middle, and then each level up from there to get that buy-in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, you know, a lot of times the message that you're bringing, like I said, it's unflattering, but don't despair. Right? It may look really ugly on this piece of paper, the opportunities versus the spend, but hopefully if you've done your homework properly, you're going to come in, you need some historical numbers to back you up. So hopefully you have trends, maybe you have a forecast, maybe you can show year on year, month on month, the percent growth, right? And maybe you know what that is if you've got some really good business intelligence. Is it you've had an explosive adoption of Cosmos or Kubernetes, or, you know, be able to pinpoint what that is. But also come in with a plan as well. And so absolutely, you got to start at the bottom and work your way up. And it's funny because I've talked to other people at other companies in FinOps, and we've all kind of experienced the same thing. Some people don't take kindly when you bring unflattering information. So you just, you kind of smile and nod and say, you know, but all is not lost. We're going to help you here, right? And so it's really how you present it and spin it, right?
Right. I was in a scenario once, just sharing my perspective about that, because of like what bad news might be in that corporate political environment is if you're starting a cloud program and you've been historically on-prem. That was my experience. I presented how we were going to do cloud and how we were going to do FinOps. We called it cloud optimization at the time. And that was threatening to people. And so like, even though I was saying nothing about what they did, in fact, I remember proposing something and trying to get approval to go forth. And someone at the table said, no one's talked to me about this. And I just kind of looked at them and in a friendly way saying, well, why in the world would I have to talk to you about this? You just happen to be in the room right now. And but that was enough to totally dismantle that attempt at approval. So I had to go forth and make sure, like, get buy-in to anyone who felt threatened by that message.
So true.
I've never really shared that one. That is a great point of executive buy-in. Is it's not just executive buy-in, but all your stakeholders and people you have to live with every day.
Oh, yes, most definitely. I mean, Joe, the struggle is real, as they say. I mean, I like to speak from pictures. Sometimes numbers, they're there, but I'm like, let's not focus on that, you know? So I like to tell them, I like to reassure them and say, okay, have no fear. This is how we're going to handle this. This is our approach. You know, maybe this is the runway to get us out of the situation, right? Maybe the numbers are part of your pitch, but focus on, you know, how we're going to get this thing propped back up, or how we're going to do some market standardy things, right? Like give people some handrails. And, you know, it's funny, I was talking to Trey Morgan the other day, and he's a fellow FinOps practitioner. And I said, I feel like FinOps is kind of white glove. We're not going to just throw a bunch of stuff at you. We're going to hold your hand and we're going to walk you through the process. And it's funny because Trey and I both kind of look at it that way, is we're here to help you. We're not going to just throw a bunch of business intelligence, whatever. We're going to say, here's your opportunities. Let us know which ones you can implement. Let us help you if you need to help implement. Let us measure that efficiency after the fact. And now it's carbon and cost. And so I love that term white glove, because we're not just going to throw you to the wolves or say, good luck to you, blessings be upon you. It's, yeah, we're going to bring you the opportunities and we're going to get through this together, if you will, you know? Yeah.
That's very true. It's a people industry.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So you go forth and you say it doesn't happen overnight. This takes time to get that buy-in. What was one of the first things you did to establish yourself or your FinOps function at your company? What was one of the first activities that you did after you got that buy-in?
I would say the very first thing I did was I made sure I had two really good business intelligence and data engineer people, because I knew I was going to need that. You know, they say data is the new oil, but I mean, it's so important. What underpins your FinOps program is your business intelligence, whether it's a third-party tool or a little bit of data that you take from native or building your business intelligence, but you got to have some reporting to underpin your FinOps, right? But the first thing I did is I set about, and I like to use this word, evangelizing. So I needed to build a community of practice. So I set out to do a series of boot camps and workshops and community of practice meetings monthly. And so all were welcome. And we would go through our scorecards and our business metrics. And basically, we want to see how good is good and how bad is bad based on our policies, where the consumption was. And sometimes a lot of people didn't like that. They're like, well, you know, so-and-so shouldn't see my data. And I said, well, you know, we're here to learn from one another. Yes. So if team A is doing something great and team B is not so great, like maybe you guys should talk, right? And right. Figure that out. So I set about building this community of practice and fostering upskilling and all those things, right? But the first things first was to get the word out there and show them what the process looks like and the sponsorship and the charter. What are the inputs and outputs? What's your role? Mm-hmm. You, what persona do you fall in? And what does that look like for roles and responsibilities? But most importantly was when I had somebody that was taking it all in, they were drinking that Kool-Aid and they actually had a success story or a win, I would invite them back the next month to present. And they were so happy. They were so happy to do that, right? And they were so proud. And we really wanted to uplift that and say, see, these are your peers. They took the recommendations. We walked them through end to end. And we would award month on month community of practice champions for the month. We would pick like three and we would give certificates. And then, you know, about 15, 20 minutes of our community of practice sessions were our practitioners telling their success stories. And that's so that was awesome. Like the best free marketing that we could have capitalized on to build the momentum of the FinOps program, right?
You know, Nationwide had some of those community of practice things, but I didn't leverage that. And now I'm wondering if, I look back and wonder what it would have been like had I gone that route. So how often were they meeting monthly, this community of practice?
And they're meeting monthly.
This gets a bit tactical, but how did you get the message out that, hey, we're going to have these monthly community of practice meetings and you should attend?
All over the place. Viva Engage. Big distribution lists. You know, as soon as we had somebody joining the practice, we would hit them everywhere. Calendar invites, you know, and we would have campaigns. So I have a guy in my group, he's just like a marketing genius. And it would be, we would hit them, the meeting's coming out 3 weeks, the meeting's coming out 2 weeks. And the first, however many people to respond or whatever, we're going to buy you a cup of coffee or whatever. And it sounded a little gimmicky, but we were trying to get people to come and see what good things were happening there, right? We even have like little flyer things that you can stick in the elevator. Put a flyer in there, put it in the coffee bar. Like we were like FinOps is everywhere. so, we pulled out all the stops.
That's awesome. You'd have campaigns and they would meet and you had 15 minutes of celebration and sharing. Then what else did you go over in those meetings? What was the format?
Yes, Q&A time. What are new services that were coming down the pipe and how to optimize those? New reporting and features that maybe became available in our third-party tooling. And we would review everybody's scorecards, but a lot of question and answer at the end, but mostly it was an opportunity for us to tell them what's coming down the pipe, what's next in FinOps, right? We have a plan on a page. What are our priorities in terms of spend? You know, where do we see the biggest growth? Where do we see the biggest need for improvement? So it was a variety, but most of our agenda was we'd go through the scorecards, but also we need to keep them abreast of what's new. What do we see in the area of services? What's coming in terms of what the cloud suppliers are going to do?
That's smart.
Do a lot of that.
So you basically build this community practice. It gets you buy-in, but then it also helps keep everyone up to date on what's going on. You basically establish a communication platform with your stakeholders.
100%.
And it's keeping them engaged. That's really smart. I wonder why I didn't do that.
I was like, we're going to print t-shirts, certificates. We'll just give you a community practice champion t-shirt. And I mean, it's grown. I think if people are looking to do it today, some of the things that we've also implemented are podcasts like this. We had a customer the other day that they were wanting to share how they had done something. So the podcast is a great way to do that. Gamification. Didn't do that in the beginning, but we certainly do that now. And we introduce a playbook, which is amazing. And I wish I would have done that sooner than later. But the playbook is how to do FinOps. Where do you go to see your spend and your reports? in your budgets. If you don't have one, you should probably make one. How to adopt FinOps, how to optimize, where to go for reporting. And so this thing is living and breathing. We have actually meetings once a month to evergreen this playbook. All those tactics work, right?
Yeah. How to build your own internal FinOps community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And you've gotten great results from that because you've been doing this for years now. What have been some of the biggest challenges you've faced over that time?
Oh, my goodness. So, I mean, what I call this on the at the onset of COVID, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, everybody's trying to save money. I would say the biggest challenge was because you're getting your buy-in for your FinOps practice, but then you kind of have to go back and get buy-in for other really big levers to save money. And commitment usage discounts is one of those. And RIs are a lot more complicated than savings plans, right? Because if you're procuring them centrally, then you have to figure out how to charge them back, which was challenging. And I personally, I'm in a decentralized IT model. So everybody, you know, has their own role to play in that, right? So you can only influence so much. But I think that was challenging to get the buy-in. And maybe there wasn't a lot of agreement, but at the end of the day, the writing was on the wall. This is how much money is left on the table. We have to do something about it. So that was a challenge in figuring out how to get them, how to charge them back, and then how to manage those. I think another one was you still have, and it's funny, I talked to somebody last week about starting a FinOps practice, and we still have some little straggling tagging challenges, right? And how do you report these things? Every company is different. Do you want to report it by line of business? Do you want to report it by portfolio or product? Or what language does your stakeholder speak when you're trying to send this message of saving money? And while cost avoidance is good, the challenge I was trying to showcase with commitment usage discounts is this is real money. FinOps is about making money. So it's saving money, but it's about making money. The money that you saved, you can reinvest that in a capital project or buy down a dividend, or this is the stuff that makes it into an annual report. The other stuff is what you would have spent, right? It's kind of funny money, you know? So it's really kind of delineating, you know, the difference between the two, cost avoidance and real cash preservation.
Right.
And then being bold, leaning into that, saying, I'm going to say we need to be at this percent coverage rate. And then benchmarking yourself against your peers. That's good when you're in a real challenging moment and you have something and, you know, you can say, well, here's where we are. And then I went and talked to all my people in my FinOps community and see what their challenges are and what they're doing. And I think that's another way when you're trying to sell something. Maybe it's not a all-encompassing business case for FinOps itself, but if there is a component of the domains and capabilities that you need to further go back in and sell, then benchmarking is a good way. It's just kind of do a little sanity check. Hey, where am I in relation to everybody else? Am I crawling? Am I walking? Am I running? Am I in various phases of crawl, walk, and run in the different domain and capabilities? And so sometimes surveying your peers and finding out how mature or immature you are, maybe that might be the catalyst to get your C-suite to push your idea over the edge or get that buy-in.
Yeah, absolutely. That state of FinOps data is very handy because it can be helpful to not only show people, okay, this is an area that we need to invest in. It can also be used as a way to, you know, butter up your leadership saying, look at how great your leadership is. Exactly. We are very mature in this capability. Yeah, aren't we all doing such a great job? What great leaders.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's another thing I was going to bring up. If you can't sell it, don't rule out somebody coming in and giving you an audit and saying, how are you doing? Give you a little report card. That's another possibility, right? To maybe sell your ideas, you know, get somebody to come in and do an audit of your FinOps or your CCOE and see, you know, how good is good or how bad is bad. And I love to say that, but, you know, sometimes it's necessary, right?
You're making me think how I started FinOps in my past. And oh, I wonder if I should have done that. If there's something that you could have done over differently, what would you have done? Knowing what you know now versus what you knew then, what's something like, oh, I would have done it a little bit differently when I was starting this up?
You know, I think what I would have done differently is I would have really, because I'm answering this because I'm decentralized, I would have really doubled down on roles and responsibilities because it circles back to competition versus collaboration. You have to be able to row in the same direction and walk in the same direction and pull in the same direction, right? Because if you don't have that, it can slow you down and it can take your eye off the prize. And I think looking backwards, you know, making sure that we had the roles and responsibilities crystal clear, so then we could probably have reached our destination a little quicker. Not that we weren't successful, but, you know, I don't think everybody back in 2018 was as cost conscious as they are in 2024, shall we say, right? Mm-hmm. And just a real delineation of roles and responsibilities. And I didn't talk about it today, but bringing the C-suite in for the state of the estate. So everybody that's got their piece, right, those clearly defined roles and responsibilities, they're there, whether it's your C-suite or your direct leadership for whatever organization you roll up to in FinOps. Everybody's there to give their part. So if you're billing and chargeback, you're going to talk about that. And then you're going to talk about recommendations. And you're going to talk about how good is good. Somebody's going to talk about budgets and forecasts. And are we within 1% to 2% of our actuals? And if not, why? And so I think I would have really shored that up and organized that a little better, because that kind of came into play a little later, right? Yeah. And without clear roles and responsibilities, it maybe looked like it wasn't as much collaborative as it was competition. But I say, get those roles and responsibilities, get that buy-in, get everybody rowing in the same page. Now, that's not to say you won't go through a reorg and then, you know, you just put everything in a basket and mix it up, right? Mm-hmm. And then so much for your roles and responsibilities, because I would say you're one merger and acquisition away from that happening too. But make sure you really tidied up those roles and responsibilities. And I think that was probably for me that if I had to go back and do it again, and budgets, implementing budgets way on the front end, because now we're trying to take the candy away from the baby. And it's like, what? you want me to decrease my spend? Well, I can't do that. So budgets are important. But I know we didn't talk about that a lot, and I know we're out of time, but make sure those are in place, because boy, trying to apply them after somebody is, you know, agile and DevOps, that's a harder said than done.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I'm going to have to do a show on budgets.
Exactly. Excellent. A whole podcast on it.
Well, thank you so much, Tammy.
Thanks, Joe.
I've been in FinOps for many years now, and it's interesting to me to still see so many people just getting started and working on adoption at their company. The majority of the community is still new. So if you have an experienced voice, like Tammy's, you can really help the community by sharing your experience. Tammy's approach to facing internal politics, or competition, as she puts it, is the type of experience that is so valuable to hear. It's hard and frustrating work, but persistence pays off. Always work on stakeholder adoption and buy-in. It never stops and never goes away. Don't let them feel taken for granted, or else you'll be starting over on your FinOps adoption journey. Thank you so much to Tammy Burnett for sharing her experience. Tammy was dropping gold for you to pick up. Feel free to share with your colleagues and friends. It's all great advice. Also, thank you as well to my co-host, Stacy Case. She finally got down to the bottom of what the name of the podcast is. FinOps Pod, not The FinOps Pod. And I hope I get to see you at FinOps X. Even if you're Team Holger, I want to see you there. Or maybe I get to see you at FinOps X Europe in Barcelona. x.finops.org to check out both events. Until next time, FinOptonauts, keep on FinOpsin'.